This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Sadanan Dume of the American Enterprise Institute. He writes for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Turning to Afghanistan, since August of 2021, you will understand, Afghanistan has moved into non-transparency, a darkness in Eurasia, a question of the Taliban being a responsible governance is set aside. What do we know? Very little, because we do not have eyes and ears inside. However, Sadanan has talked to a man who is outside looking at Afghanistan, a former Afghan deputy defense minister. His name is Tamim Assay. Sadanan, a very good evening to you. The former Afghan deputy defense minister, I learned from your column, now heads the Institute of War and Peace Studies. What did you learn from him about what's going on inside this darkness visible called Afghanistan? Good evening to you.
Very good evening to you too, John. Well, you know, what he had to say and what I've gathered from other sources as well is that our worst fears about the Taliban are being proven true. You know, as you recall, John, you know, 3 years ago or even longer than that, there were people in Washington and elsewhere who were arguing that Taliban 2.0 will be a kinder, gentler Taliban, that they would be less concerned with oppressing women and more concerned with taking out the trash. And that because they had spent time in Doha and because they had mastered internet technologies and social media like Instagram, they were suddenly going to become less radical, less ideological. And now we have a situation where all those people who were, you know, selling us that idea of a kinder, gentler Taliban, they should be ashamed of themselves today because they've been proven decisively wrong. The column was prompted by an announcement by the Taliban chief, Hibatullah Akhundzada, where he announced that they were returning to the barbaric practice of stoning women to death for adultery. So, you know, basically the new Taliban is just as vile and just as evil as the old Taliban. And as the former Afghan deputy defense minister pointed out, they see themselves as a model for the world. So it's not necessary that what is in Afghanistan remains in Afghanistan.
The neighbor, Pakistan, the Taliban of Pakistan is more than just a pest. It's a major threat to peace in Pakistan. There's reason to believe in the reporting of the last 3 years that the Afghan Taliban completely supports and gives sanctuary to the Pakistan Taliban when necessary. Your understanding of Pakistan right now, is it addressing the irony that it's the ISI, the intelligence services in Pakistan, that have invented this monster? Do they deal with that in Islamabad?
I think they're trying to deal with it belatedly, but in a patchwork manner. I mean, I've always pointed out from the start, even after Kabul fell, that in many ways the biggest threat from the Taliban and the Taliban revival and the ideas that they represent is to Pakistan, because this idea of a severe state governed by Sharia law, the way they interpret it coming out of these Deobandi madrasas, many of them in Pakistan, that's something that has animated this movement for decades now. And it's something that Pakistan, as you rightly say, the Pakistani military and its spy agency, the ISI, really, they poured money into it. They gave it protection. They gave it support. They gave it propaganda help. And the worry is that, you know, there is a constituency for this in Pakistan, too. Now, some of them were just thought they were playing the great game, a new edition of the great game. They were doing it for geopolitics, but they really did want to continue to send their own daughters to school and in some cases to college in America. But you have to understand that in Pakistan, you also have people who genuinely agree with what the Taliban are doing, that they don't want women to go to school. They think that all the evils in the world come from the West. They think Islam and hardline radical Islam is the solution to society's problems. And those guys have been given such a boost by the Taliban taking power in Afghanistan. So, I mean, it's really a deeply destabilizing force in Pakistan, and not just at the superficial level, right, where, you know, how many security forces were killed. I mentioned in my article that Pakistan lost more than 500 people in 2023, the most in a decade. That's a big deal. But the underlying problem, right, this battle of ideas where the Taliban ideas are right there next door and are attractive to a section of the Pakistani population, I would argue that's a bigger threat to the stability of Pakistan.
Al-Qaeda, there are reports, credible reports, over these last years since the takeover by Taliban, that Al-Qaeda is prospering in Afghanistan with training camps. We know Zawahiri was found out by a drone at a residence associated with the Haqqani network, and he was given refuge there. And if the boss is there, the soldiers are there. Did you find any in your research for the Taliban today, did you find anybody speaking out about how it's really not good to establish an ungoverned space where Al-Qaeda can train the next generation of terror?
Not just Al-Qaeda, John. I mean, it's a really valid concern, but it's also ISIS-K. In fact, some experts argue that the center of gravity for the Islamic State has moved from Syria and Iraq to Afghanistan now. So, you know, you have the problem with the Taliban themselves and the extreme ideology that they represent, the kind of demonstration effect. And as I point out in my column, as long as you have any part of our planet that is home to this kind of radical jihad lab, there's always the danger that it would attract disaffected Muslims from Europe the way ISIS did. That has not happened so far, but it could happen. And so there's the demonstration effect, but there's also the fact, as you point out, that, you know, they provide a safe haven for other people who think in similar ways, whether it's Al-Qaeda or ISIS-K. In the case of ISIS, the Taliban and the ISIS, they have a turf war. It's not exactly a safe haven, but nonetheless, it's not a coincidence that even more extreme ideas are also kind of incubating on that same piece of territory.
Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh, much in the news, I read from your column, has likened his organization's campaign against Israel to the Taliban's successful insurgency against the U.S. and its allies. Great, Taliban is inspiring more cutthroats. That alone is reason to rethink abandoning all those people who are starving. Sudden on this, did you find people aware of the facts that you've established in your column?
I mean, unfortunately, John, what's happened is that it's really, you know, dropped off the radar screen. And I understand that, right? There's a lot going on in the world. We have a hot war between Russia and Ukraine. We have a hot war between the Hamas terrorists and Israel. And Afghanistan is, in many ways, not a very pleasant memory for us in America because, you know, people rightly don't want to kind of relive the humiliating way in which we exited in August 2021. So it doesn't get that much attention. And I don't think that people outside of a few NGOs and a few committed journalists such as yourself are really paying as much attention to it as we used to.
Sadanan Dume, the American Enterprise Institute, the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm John Batchelor.